The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up. It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News.
And good evening. Wall Street today signaled its approval of the tax cuts passed by the Republican-controlled Congress.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup, the lavish life of President Trump's former campaign chairman on trial in federal court.
He bought hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of suits or this ostrich coat.
A warning ahead of the midterm elections just months away.
What we are seeing are the malign influence operations, in effect, information warfare.
Later, China ups the ante in its trade war with the U.S. as farmers are caught in the crosshairs.
We say we're at the blunt of the spear. I think the spear's penetrated a little bit. There's going to be blood on the floor.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau.
Let's start this weekend with the trial of former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort in federal court in Alexandria, Virginia. Correspondent Paula Reed has been covering it. Paula, we've heard a lot about Manafort's ostrich and python coats and lavish spending. What's the prosecution trying to get to?
Well, that's the sort of lifestyles of the rich and famous aspect of this case. The prosecution spent the first day putting folks on the stand who had Manafort as a customer. Now, why did they do that? Because it wasn't so much about what he was buying, it was about how he was paying. So, for example, when he bought hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of suits or this ostrich coat, he paid with wire transfers from Cyprus. And prosecutors asked these shopkeepers, is that unusual? They all said yes. So this is really the crux of their case. They're arguing that he lobbied on behalf of foreign officials. That money, tens of millions of dollars allegedly, went into these offshore accounts. And then Manafort allegedly laundered it into the United States by buying luxury goods.
We're also expecting a key aide to Manafort, Rick Gates, to testify soon.
Exactly. And Gates and Manafort were originally charged together in the same conspiracy. But Gates agreed to cooperate with special counsel. He entered a plea deal. He agreed to cooperate, testify against Manafort, tell them what he knows about his business dealings in exchange for leniency. Manafort's whole defense, though, is that all of this was Rick Gates' fault. Rick Gates failed to keep track of the money. He failed to file things on time. It's all his fault. Now, if you look at the evidence against both men, clearly, if the allegations are to be believed, there's plenty of blame to go around. But just because Gates did some things wrong doesn't mean Manafort did nothing wrong. So it'll be very interesting to see not only how prosecutors use Gates, but more importantly, how the defense cross-examines him.
These are charges only related to bank and tax fraud. But how important is whatever happens at the conclusion of this trial to the Central Russia probe?
That's right. This has nothing to do with the president. This has nothing to do with the campaigns. But in many ways, this is a referendum on the special counsel's investigation. Because if Manafort is convicted, certainly that bolsters, I think, the special counsel. People are like, look, they've been investigating. Here's this mountain of evidence, and they got someone. There are still questions, and even the judge in the case has asked, wait a second, is bank fraud within the special counsel's probe? He ruled that it was. He allowed it to go forward. But if he is acquitted, partially acquitted or fully acquitted, that will bolster the president and his allies who claim that this is a witch hunt. And they would argue, they would say, look, they looked at Manafort before, and there's a reason they didn't charge him, because there wasn't enough evidence.
CBS News correspondent Paula Reed on the Weekend Roundup. Thanks, Paula.
Thank you.
A united message from the president's top national security and intelligence officials on election security.
The Trump administration is once again trying to show that it's taking the issue of Russian meddling in the electoral process seriously.
The president has made it clear that his administration will not tolerate foreign interference in our elections from any nation state or other dangerous actor.
Press Secretary Sarah Sanders joined by top intelligence and law enforcement officials, including FBI Director Christopher Wray.
We are not yet seeing the same kind of efforts to specifically target election infrastructure. What we are seeing are the malign influence operations, in effect, information warfare.
Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Washington.
But later, at a rally Thursday night in Pennsylvania, the president continued to call the probe into Russian election meddling a hoax. Meanwhile, Facebook says it's closed dozens of fake pages and accounts in its efforts to crack down on election meddling.
Facebook says the 32 pages had more than 290,000 followers and were created between March 2017 and May 2018. Their aim? To spread misinformation and meddle in the midterm elections. Facebook's chief operating officer, Sheryl Sandberg, called this fight an arms race when she spoke to reporters during a conference call.
This kind of behavior is not allowed on Facebook.
Some of the pages focused on divisive issues, antagonizing both sides. CNET technology producer Dan Patterson.
The goal was simply to make the United States weaker and to make our allies less confident in the United States' ability to achieve our foreign policy goals.
Sandberg would not confirm if the Russians were behind these campaigns.
We're still in the very early stages of our investigation, and we don't have all the facts, including who may be behind this.
Vladimir Jutit, CBS News, New York.
A federal judge forced a man to take down blueprints posted online for 3D-printed guns. It follows a decision by the Trump administration to allow the designs to be posted, despite the president signaling he may intervene. Correspondent Tony DeCoppel talked to the man, Cody Wilson.
I think access to the firearm is a fundamental human dignity. It's a fundamental human right.
Cody Wilson's dream of a downloadable library of gun blueprints and a world where anyone can easily manufacture a deadly weapon at home stalled Tuesday. A Seattle judge blocked Wilson from publishing new gun files.
What will you do about 3D guns?
And questioned whether the Trump administration should have granted his company permission in the first place.
Makes no damn sense, no damn sense at all, to make those available.
Washington State's Bob Ferguson, who led the lawsuit by 8 attorneys general, argued that 3D-printed plastic weapons are dangerous because they're untraceable, often undetectable, and require no background check.
What I'm doing is legally protected. I will go to the appellate level. I will go to the Supreme Court. I will waste all my time.
Wilson already published 10 blueprints as of last Friday, and the AR-15 schematics alone have been downloaded thousands of times.
There is nothing good that can come with Defense Distributed uploading these files.
Poe Murray is chairwoman of Newtown Action Alliance, a gun control group created after the massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary.
Our laws and our policies have to keep up with the changing advancements in technology.
The future is simply digital fabrication.
Wilson argues that it's already impossible to police 3D gun technology, and he believes he has a free speech right to publish the designs.
I'm talking about files. I'm not talking about the guns. I'm not a licensed gun manufacturer. I don't make guns at this location. I have data. I can share the data.
When somebody downloads a gun from your website with your blueprints and kills somebody with it, how are you going to feel personally?
I don't believe that I provided you anything other than the general knowledge of what an AR-15 is.
But to fund his legal fight, Wilson's company does sell these milling machines. They come preloaded with design files that allow anyone to make their own AR-15 or 1911 handgun in about 2 days. No serial number and no screening. They retail for $2,000 and there's a 3-month backlog.
What makes you comfortable with a world where people can pump out guns in their garage anytime they want to?
What's going to make me comfortable is when people stop coming to this office and acting like there's a debate about it. The debate is over. The guns are downloadable. The files are in the public domain. You cannot take them back. You can adjust your politics to this reality. You will not ask me to adjust mine.
CBS News correspondent Tony DeCoppel reporting. Coming up, the impact of the China tariffs on pig farmers.
It has been very devastating to our business.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. China says it'll impose additional tariffs on $60 billion of U.S. products in response to the Trump administration's plans to raise even more tariffs on China. President Trump has asked the U.S. Trade Representative to investigate increasing proposed tariffs to 25% from 10%. Among those closely watching this is Jim Heimerl. He's head of the National Pork Producers Council. Jim, China's a big market for U.S. pork. How concerned are you about Chinese retaliation?
All very concerned. China is our number three export market, and it's been very devastating. We were one of the first in agriculture to be exposed on tariffs.
Can you give us a kind of idea about the impact that hog farmers have already been feeling?
Well, it dropped our market. We figured on an annualized basis, dropped our market $2.2 million. It's about $18 per head for our market. You know, a pig brings about $140 per head, and dropping at $18 per head on an annualized figure, that's a big impact to our market. Going into the last quarter of a year, that's going to be pretty devastating. Some of our farmers, Mexico also is hurting us pretty bad. We had a 10% tariff imposed by them in June and another 10% imposed in July. So between those two markets equals about 40% of our exports. We export, last year we exported 27%. This year we're on task to be about 30% until the tariff come out from China. So we were looking for a good year, but, you know, it's really drying up quick with the China tariffs.
Why don't you think then hog farmers or any farmers haven't been successful in getting the ear of President Trump on this?
Well, we hope he's still listening. We had a little bit of aid come out, but we hope he's still listening to us. He's asking us to be patriots, and we are patriots, but we're kind of at the blunt of the sword of taking some of that patriotism. We could only bleed for so long. So I know agriculture, we're one of the lowest cost producers in the world in the hog industry. You know, pork is your number one protein source of meat, good quality meat, and that's why I think they are attacking our business, because we are such a good low-cost producer of a good protein source for good meat quality.
You said the president has asked for you to be patriots. He's also asked for your patience. How much patience do you have left?
We're getting to the end. You know, we say we're at the blunt of the spear. I think the spear's penetrated a little bit. There's going to be blood on the floor here this last quarter. Like I say, we're going to lose $25, $30 a head. Going to for the last quarter looks pretty bad. Our futures have dropped. The cash prices have dropped in the last 2 weeks. They've really taken a bat. We look at last quarter, big losses. First quarter of 19 is looking at big losses. We need some action. We need some level playing fields, and free trade is what we're after right now.
Do you imagine if this continues, it'll affect the bottom line in terms of votes for President Trump and his supporters in the midterms?
Yeah, that's hard to predict. You know, I can't predict those things. I'm not in politics. I'm a pig farmer, but no doubt it could have affect some. But we're hoping he's listening to us. You know, we've National Pork Producers Council has been in Washington lobbying and trying to bend their ear a little bit and say, you know, it's time to open up free trade. We just opened up a new free trade agreement with Argentina, and we're working on other trade agreements. So hopefully he's listening to us. I know we've worked with the USDA. Secretary Perdue working on, you know, telling what we need to get done and to help protect and work with our industry.
Jim Heimerl, president of the National Pork Producers Council. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Missing 12-year-old Chinese girl Jinjing Ma has been found safe following an Amber Alert. Police say she was abducted Thursday at Reagan National Airport, just outside Washington. Her suspected abductor is described as a 40-year-old Asian woman. More from correspondent Jan Crawford at the airport.
Shortly before Ma disappeared, police say another surveillance photo shows Jinjing's abductor arriving at the airport with a male suspect. Huckler says Jinjing may have gone with her abductor willingly.
The child appears to have left without any force. She entered the vehicle without any force, but that does not release any of our concerns.
Now, a witness said he may have seen her abductor meet up with her in New York and actually hand her some food. The Virginia State Police, the FBI, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children are investigating, and they're also looking to contact her guardians in China.
CBS News correspondent Jen Crawford reporting from Reagan National Airport in Alexandria, Virginia. The East Coast continues to deal with flooding. In Lynchburg, Virginia, an overflowing dam prompted the evacuations of more than 120 homes. Ashley Ann is a reporter with WDBJ-TV.
The water just rushing underneath that bridge next to the earthen dam there where most of the damage actually is. So the sidewalk that actually washed out from underneath and some damage that was done to the dam area at this time.
To the West Coast now, where California firefighters continue to battle wildfires throughout the state. A state fire spokesman says California has already spent a quarter of its annual budget to fight fires, and it's only a month into the budget year. Our Steve Futterman visited crews trying to gain control of one of the state's largest blazes in Redding.
Fire crews here continue to slowly get control of the Carr Fire, the largest and most destructive of the California wildfires, but there are more than a dozen other major fires throughout the state, and new fires starting each day. Russ Fowler is a battalion chief with CAL FIRE.
Our goal is to hit those new fires the heaviest and the fastest so that none of those new fires become heavy or become large.
Fire crews here battling the Carr Fire believe the worst may be over, but for some it's too late. Nearly 1,000 homes have been destroyed.
Here we were on this cul-de-sac, this neighborhood, and then we go away and 2 hours later it's gone.
And many other homes remain in danger. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Redding, California.
Meanwhile, Europe is breaking weather records. Portugal has recorded its highest temperature of about 113 degrees amid a European heat wave, and temperatures are expected to climb throughout the weekend. Correspondent Seth Doan is in Rome with more.
The culprit, hot air blowing from Africa. It's leaving Europeans and summer visitors melting in triple-degree temperatures.
You're from Nashville,
yes.
So you're used to the heat.
Yes, this is a different kind of heat.
Jessica Pippett likened it to a never-ending sauna at Rome's Spanish Steps.
It is hot here. It's like walking into a hairdryer with the heat just blowing at you.
The Iberian Peninsula is getting some of the worst of this heat. Portugal issued a nationwide health warning. In Sweden, a mountaintop glacier melted so much it's no longer that country's highest peak. And satellite imagery from northern Europe shows the transition from lush green in late June to burned out brown in less than a month. Farmers in Germany are demanding more than $1 billion in aid to deal with the drought. And so many beers have been sold there, it's straining supplies at German breweries. The Howell family from Texas told us they were trying to drink as much as possible and noted it's hot in Dallas, too.
But we'd rather be in Italy drinking the water here than in Texas.
Hundreds of fountains offer a little relief here in Rome. And in Finland, a supermarket chain has said it will stay open tonight so customers can use its AC. Seth Doan, CBS News, Rome.
Up next, a new development in the investigation into a murder of a Houston heart doctor on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Sunday nights, Monday mornings, or Tuesday afternoons. You can listen to 60 Minutes whenever you want with the weekly podcast from CBS News.
How do we know you're telling the truth?
Because I have no reason to lie.
With hard-hitting investigative reports, interviews, and profiles.
Did these documents that you got prove corruption?
Absolutely.
From a variety of CBS News correspondents and contributors.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Anderson Cooper.
For the biggest scoops and the best storytelling, subscribe to the 60 Minutes podcast today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Anthony Salvanto is a familiar voice at CBS News, especially on election nights. Anthony is our Elections and Surveys Director, and he's out with a new book, Where Did You Get This Number? A Pollster's Guide to Making Sense of the World. And this weekend, he's in Washington to talk with us. Good to see you in the flesh, Anthony.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let's start with the president. At a rally in Tampa Tuesday, President Trump said polls are fake, like everything else. That is a direct attack on your entire profession, Anthony. So as a pollster, how do you counter that?
Well, look, you know, the president is certainly not the first person to, you know, sort of wonder, how do these polls work? Pollsters put together a microcosm of the country. When you see a poll, you're talking about a sample, which means that each and every kind of person is represented. Even if we haven't talked to you, and everybody always writes in and asks, wait, you know, you didn't talk to me. And that's true. We probably didn't. But we probably talked to somebody just like you. And we now do a substantial amount of our polling with the interviews. People can take them online. Why? Again, because that's where people have gone. And as pollsters, we need to go where people go. It's our mission is to talk to and hear from people. When they're online, what we've done is we put together representative samples of people who are on what we call panels. And these are very large, and sometimes the companies that do this, and we work with YouGov a lot, and the panels consist of millions of people who, when we send them the poll, they know that they're going to be surveyed. They know that for various things, including our CBS News poll. So they're taking surveys. They're getting their voices heard.
But doesn't that automatically exclude parts of the population who aren't as interested in participating in surveys?
But that's the point. The trick is for whether you're doing a panel or whether you're doing you're calling people and asking them to pick up the phone. You want the people who do pick up and do answer to make sure that they look like the rest of the population.
Well, if so much care is taken in these surveys, what happened in 2016?
That's a great question. Part of the answer is make sure you look not just at accurate numbers, but at meaningful numbers. So in 2016, let's start with a national popular vote. Hillary Clinton was shown leading in that, And in fact, those polls turned out to be very accurate. She did, in fact, get more votes nationally. But so what? Because that didn't make the that didn't win the election for her. So there's a case of an accurate number. People saw Hillary Clinton leading nationally and thought, oh, well, she's going to win. But that's not where the election is decided. That's one part of the answer. The other part, quite frankly, is that where the states, when the states mattered, Michigan, Wisconsin, a lot of us think pollsters did not do enough polling there. And there's a lesson in that, and that is go and look at every place, even the places you assume, you think you know what's going to happen. You need to go look at those places. And that's a lesson I'm going to carry forward. I think pollsters are going to carry forward. And, you know, it talks a little bit, too, about 2018. Because, you know, this year I'm seeing a lot of pollsters, not us, not CBS, but a lot of pollsters putting out more national numbers, the generic ballot for Congress, right? Who do you want to win? Well, Congress is not a national race. It is a seat by seat race. It is, you know, there's a few districts, relatively few districts that are going to swing control of Congress. And that's where you want to poll. You don't want to go talk to people in, you know, on the west side of Manhattan where they're sure Democrats, or in the middle of, you know, Oklahoma where they're sure Republicans. Those folks aren't going to swing the election. So what we want to do is make sure that, in particular, groups that are potential new voters, especially this year, are represented in the poll. And that's something that we have to focus on. Look, you know, the Democrats' fortunes this year depend very heavily on getting people who don't typically vote in midterms out to vote. And that will certainly include a large number, I think, of minority voters, of new voters, of young voters for certain. And I think one of the challenges is going to be accurately measuring whether they truly intend to vote. And I think that will tell a political story, because that will tell you whether or not the Democrats really do have a chance.
CBS News Elections and Surveys Director Anthony Salvato on the Weekend Roundup and on his new book, Where Did You Get This? Number of Pollsters' Guide to Making Sense of the World. Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you.
Police say they've identified the man accused of killing a renowned Houston heart doctor who treated former President George H.W. Bush. Joseph Pappas was found dead in a southwest Houston neighborhood Friday. Pappas reportedly shot himself while being confronted by police. He's suspected of shooting dead Dr. Mark Houskonnect while he was biking through Texas Medical Center some 2 weeks ago.
We believe that this absolutely is the killer.
Houston Police Chief Art Acevedo says new security footage helped lead to a tip that pointed to 62-year-old Joseph James Pappas.
The suspect's mother was a patient of the doctor and died during surgery over 20 years ago.
Pappas is accused of shooting Dr. Houskonnect, a prominent cardiologist at Houston Methodist who treated former President George H.W. Bush in 2000 for an irregular heartbeat. Surveillance video allegedly shows Pappas methodically following Houskonnect on his bike as he headed to work before shooting him in broad daylight.
There's a lot of planning and sadly some skill, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
According to the investigative team with our Houston CBS affiliate KHOU, Pappas was a former law enforcement officer and recently tried to sell guns and ammunition online. Investigators say they found evidence that ties Pappas to the shooting. Neighbors were shocked by the news.
I'm blown away that he's doing it. I mean, he's a quiet man, stuck to himself.
Omar Villafranca, CBS News, Houston.
Public health officials across the U.S. are on alert for one disease that appears to be spreading recently. Here's correspondent Jim Crisula.
Cases of hand, foot, and mouth disease, an infectious viral illness that usually affects young children, have turned up in several states. Dr. Tricella Johnson Foy practices in Jacksonville, Florida.
It's usually composed of a fever, a rash that can develop in the mouth with blisters or sores, sores on the hand and the foot.
Two Major League Baseball pitchers in New York, one with the Yankees and the other with the Mets, have been sidelined by the illness. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
A new British study finds one in six people will die as a result of air pollution. More from reporter Larry Miller in London.
Regular exposure to even low levels of air pollution may cause changes to the heart similar to those in the early stages of heart failure. The study in the journal Circulation focused on people outside big cities with no underlying health problems. Those living close to busy roads had enlarged hearts. Dr. Nayong worked on the study.
They are healthy people, so the heart function is still normal, but we start seeing these early signs of enlargement of the heart.
The changes were similar to those found in physically inactive people and those with high blood pressure. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, the latest in the investigation into CBS head Les Moonves.
The multiple incidents of assault were alleged to have occurred in 1986 and 1988.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Ohio State football coach Urban Meyer is on leave amid an investigation into what he knew about domestic abuse allegations against his longtime assistant.
I believe he knew, and instead he chose to help the abuser, enable the abuser.
In an interview with sports news site Stadium, Courtney Smith recounted years of alleged abuse at the hands of her ex-husband, Zach.
He took me and shoved me up against the wall with his hands around my neck, something he did very often.
Smith says she told Urban Meyer's wife, Shelley, about that incident in 2015. In text messages obtained by reporter Brett McMurphy, Shelley Meyer allegedly wrote, "Just want you to be safe. Do you have a restraining order? He scares me."
Shelley, she said she wanted, she was going to have to tell Urban. She was going to have to tell Urban. I said, "That's fine. You know, you should tell Urban. This, we can't have somebody like this coaching young men."
Smith says she doesn't know if Shelley ever did tell her husband.
"I was never told about anything."
Meyer says he didn't know about the 2015 incident, but he was aware of an earlier allegation of abuse in 2009 when Zach Smith was on Meyer's staff at the University of Florida. Courtney Smith says her husband threw her against a wall while she was pregnant. She called the police, but later dropped the charges. The Meyers advised the Smiths to get counseling. More than 2 years later, Urban Meyer hired Smith to his staff at Ohio State.
"I don't think just because you win 85% of your games, you should be held to a different standard than anyone else."
USA Today sports writer Paul Meyerberg says the coach and the university could be liable. According to Title IX rules, Meyer is required to report instances of domestic abuse involving anyone on his staff. Otherwise, he can be fired with cause.
For him to say, "I was unaware of it," kind of runs in the face of the Urban Meyer that we know, which is a guy who has his finger on the pulse of every single thing that's happening in his program from top to bottom.
Although he was fired, Zach Smith has never been charged with domestic abuse, and his attorney told ESPN he will tell his side if he has to testify. Ohio State said in a statement it's conducting an investigation and is, quote, "focused on supporting our players and on getting to the truth as expeditiously as possible." Urban Meyer said in a statement, "I eagerly look forward to the resolution of this matter." Now, this comes as the school is already grappling with accusations by more than 100 students of alleged sexual abuse by a former school doctor, leading to 3 lawsuits against the university. Dana Jacobson, CBS News, New York.
Now to an update we've been following since last weekend. The Los Angeles County District Attorney says a woman came forward late last year with decades-old accusations against CBS Corporation CEO and Chairman Les Moonves.
A partially redacted document from the L.A. County DA's office shows a Jane Doe claimed to have encountered Moonves through employment in the television industry. The multiple incidents of assault were alleged to have occurred in 1986 and 1988 when Moonves was working at Lorimar Television. Possible offenses listed were forced oral copulation, indecent exposure, and battery. She did not actually make those allegations to police until late last year. CBS News confirmed that police interviewed Moonves' lawyer but never spoke to Moonves. The DA's office determined in February the statutes of limitation have expired. The disclosure comes days after a New Yorker article laid out allegations by 6 women who claim Moonves sexually harassed them between the mid-1980s and early 2000s. 4 of the women claimed Moonves forcibly touched or kissed them.
These are allegations that are very, very heavily corroborated.
Author Ronan Farrow wrote that New Yorker article, but he tweeted Tuesday that the new report from Los Angeles appears to stem from allegations not included in our story, from a different, additional woman. Moonves has not commented on the latest allegation, but previously denied or said he doesn't recall many of the details from the New Yorker article. He did acknowledge there were times decades ago when he may have made some women uncomfortable by making advances.
To not put Moonves on leave was shocking.
Richard Greenfield analyzes media companies. He believes the board should have had Moonves step aside during the investigation.
It makes it that much more challenging for employees to come forward if he's still in that seat versus on some form of administrative leave.
Anna Werner, CBS News, New York.
The CBS board has announced it selected two law firms to investigate. More than 100 people are lucky to be alive. After surviving a plane crash in northern Mexico, dozens of Americans were on board.
Passengers could be heard coughing, crying, and hyperventilating after escaping a downed Aeromexico jetliner just minutes after takeoff on Tuesday.
It was like so much smoke, like you couldn't breathe, you couldn't see anything. Yes. I thought that was like the end of it.
Ashley Garcia captured the drama on her cell phone. She and 102 other people made it out of the wreckage alive, but many were injured.
I saw people, like, their face were gushing blood, like, they had cut lips. I know some kids got, like, burns, like, actual burns. I know the pilot is the one that's in worst conditions because he was the one trying to help people.
Alberto Herrera says when they boarded the plane, it was sunny out, but the weather changed quickly.
All of a sudden, the plane starts struggling, and it's getting hit with hail. The higher up we went into the storm, the heavier the hail got and more wind got to us.
Mexican officials say the control tower reported the Embraer 190 jetliner descended abruptly as it attempted takeoff, possibly due to a severe gust of wind. The left wing appeared to hit the ground. The plane stopped more than 300 yards from the runway after losing its engines. It remained upright, allowing exit slides to deploy.
I think it was a mistake by the pilot. It should not have taken off.
Mexican officials say it's too soon to speculate on the cause of the crash. The National Transportation Safety Board is assisting in the investigation. Chris Martinez, CBS News.
It was a brazen theft from a cathedral near Stockholm, Sweden. Correspondent Roxana Saberi explains.
The heist of the two 17th-century crowns and orb is stunning Sweden. Police say two thieves smashed a security case, setting off an alarm in broad daylight when other people were in the building. Authorities suspect the burglars then took off on bicycles. A motorboat was on a nearby lake waiting for them, according to a British witness.
The two men hurriedly jumped on board, and it sped off in that direction over that way.
The jewels of King Carl IX and his wife, Queen Christina, are national treasures, says Scott Selby, co-author of Flawless, inside the largest diamond heist in history.
How valuable are they?
The thing is, they're priceless. But the problem is the thieves can't sell them as that. Everybody knows what they are. They're identifiable. So if the thieves were to melt down the gold, it's about 1 kilo of gold, which is currently worth about $40,000.
If these jewels are only worth $40,000, it seems like a big risk for these thieves to go through all this.
That's why the police think this might be some sort of heist to order, some sort of collector of some sort that may want these particular items. Or perhaps these thieves have some other notion of what they could do with these things, such as ransoming them.
5 years ago, another king's jewels were stolen from another cathedral in Sweden. Police found them several days later in garbage bags on a country road, thanks to an anonymous tip. Roxana Saberi, CBS News, London.
Coming up, a British gospel choir gets a heavenly reward on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Stand by.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy. Do you think it would be wise for the president to sit down for an interview with Robert Mueller?
I do.
Democratic National Committee Chair Tom Perez.
This president has absolutely no moral compass.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. A woman employed by the Secret Service as an administrative assistant at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow is suspected of working with Russian intelligence. Todd Wood is a former U.S. counterterrorism operative who now covers national security for the Washington Times.
She was there for a long time. She had access to some very sensitive information. From what I hear, it was not necessarily critical national security information, but she had schedules. She had, you know, goings on at the embassy, that type of thing, kind of low-level, constant access for a decade, which is concerning.
A newly revealed TSA surveillance program is raising alarms with privacy advocates and lawmakers on Capitol Hill. Here's CBS News transportation correspondent Chris Van Cleve.
For the first time, we're learning about another use of the Air Marshals program, providing surveillance of some travelers. It's called Quiet Skies, a TSA program started in 2010 that was expanded just last March. Quiet Skies, as first reported by the Boston Globe, identifies travelers, including American citizens, that could pose a threat but may not have been accused of a crime and are not on the no-fly list. Undercover air marshals follow those passengers at airports and on flights, taking note of behavior like excessive fidgeting or perspiration or having a cold, penetrating stare. Sources say the marshals observe up to 50 travelers a day on domestic flights. If no suspicious behavior is discovered, people are removed from the program within 90 days. There is no electronic surveillance like wiretaps. John Pistol was the TSA administrator when Quiet Skies launched.
So the whole idea was, how can we again mitigate risk against known risks and unknown risks, people who might do something but just haven't come up on anybody's radar yet?
Do you think it's a good use of your manpower?
Absolutely not.
Whistleblower Robert McLean is an air marshal. He filed a formal complaint about the program.
It goes back to what I say over and over again. The air marshal's job is to protect the cockpit and the pilots, let somebody else do the intelligence and criminal investigative work.
The program is raising some obvious privacy concerns, and now members of the House Homeland Security Committee are demanding answers from the TSA about this program. The agency insists that the program is to ensure the safety of passengers and flight crews, adding that race and religion are not taken into account, and the program is not designed or intended to surveil ordinary Americans. Chris Van Cleve, CBS News, Reagan National Airport, Virginia.
Another DHS agency is also facing controversy, FEMA, where a former top official is under fire for building an environment of sexual misconduct. CBS News correspondent Jeff Pagase has more from Washington.
Corey Coleman is accused of using FEMA's personnel department to harass women and even hire some as potential sexual partners for male employees.
Hello, my name is Corey Coleman, and I'm FEMA's Deputy Chief Component Human Capital Officer.
The allegations against the former chief of the personnel department are outlined in a preliminary report on a 7-month internal investigation. It found that Coleman, who started at FEMA in 2011, hired dozens of men who were friends and college fraternity brothers, while also hiring women he met at bars and on online dating sites. FEMA officials confirm that Coleman is accused of transferring some of the women in and out of departments so his friends could try to have sexual relationships with him. Coleman is also accused of having sexual encounters with two subordinates. FEMA's job is to respond to disasters. In 2017, its resources were stretched thin by the hurricanes in Puerto Rico, Texas, and Florida. FEMA Administrator Brock Long called the allegations of sexual misconduct deeply disturbing and said harassment of any kind will not be tolerated at FEMA. We tried to get a response to this story from Corey Coleman, but we have been unable to reach him. Jeff Begay's CBS News, Washington.
The number of fat pets is growing in the U.S.
Is your pet too fat? Now, chances are pretty good it is. That's according to the Association for Pet Obesity and Prevention. Veterinarians do classify pets as they come in, and more than 100 million dogs and cats in the U.S. are not just overweight, they're obese. 60% of cats have unhealthy weights, along with 56% of dogs. Vets say the biggest problem is that pet owners just don't recognize how serious a health threat excess weight is for a dog or cat. Jim Shenevy, CBS News.
Apple has become the first company to reach $1 trillion in market value. CBS News senior business analyst Jill Schlesinger explains why it's so successful.
One thing that really has happened that's different under Tim Cook than his predecessor, Steve Jobs, he has been a much more involved CEO with the financial management of this company.
A good reason to pinch your pennies or nickels.
When is a nickel worth a lot more than 5 cents? When it's the Eliasburg 1913 Liberty Head nickel, which is one of only five that were produced. It's named for financier Louis Eliasburg, who bought the coin in 1948. It's going up for auction at the Pennsylvania Convention Center in 2 weeks, and it's expected to go for as much as $5 million. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
They made their name at the wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle before a worldwide TV audience. Now, the Kingdom Choir from Southeast England has been blessed with a Sony recording contract.
They didn't exactly steal the show that day. But for 3.5 glorious minutes, they owned it. That week, the song soared to number one in the Billboard Hot Gospel chart. The performance has been viewed 10 million times on YouTube. For Lane Simpson and Charlene Monique Morris, the whirlwind began before they even got to the chapel that morning.
And then when we had the police escort, that's when I thought, mate, I can go home. Real. I literally can tell my grandkids this.
Like, would it have to stop at any red light?
Yes, no red light.
That's crazy.
Police escort.
That's the one thing I always talk about.
Yeah, me too.
I'm like, please.
You didn't have to stop at any red lights.
Yeah, no.
The wedding and the Sony record deal was the result of hard work and an answer to a prayer.
For us, I'll be very honest, it's like, oh, wow, we actually get to reach so many more people. Yeah. Mm. And that's the exciting thing for us. It's like, this is really, really cool.
It's an opportunity granted by God, choir director Karen Gibson says, not to mention Prince Harry and Meghan.
Who were you singing for that day?
We were singing for the couple, definitely, because it's their wedding. They're very private, personal, intimate ceremony on a world stage.
Because something in their voices, that sound, that song, struck a chord that day that resonated far beyond the castle walls. Charlie Daggett, CBS News, London.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Jake Rosen is the intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.